Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another segment of the Triple E's Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is retired veteran of the New York State Police, 25 years of distinguished service, and recently retired director of security at Mount Pleasant Middle School, Schenectady, New York. Last but not least, a man of God, Deacon Wayne Neal. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, we so appreciate you. First, I want to say is we're going to talk about some current things involving, you know, policing and the criminal justice system. But I am pro-police. I'm just anti-bad police. So I want to start with that before we go any further. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your educational background.
Well, I'm from Long Island. I went to Hofstra University. I then attended the New York State Police Academy and met a lot of great people there. I became a New York State Trooper and retired as a BCI investigator, where I investigated all aspects of the New York State penal law and criminal procedure law.
Okay. So I want to dig right in. What's your response about the state of policing recently, starting with certain cases that the whole country knows about, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Greg Floyd, and we're going to end with Rashad Brooks. But just give me a little synopsis on what's your current opinion on the state of policing surrounding these cases.
Well, in terms of the Arbery case, that was done by civilians, so there was no police involvement other than the investigation that will follow in that particular case. I'm thankful for God that it was caught on videotape, because we were allowed to see actually what happened, and we can appropriate departments will do their investigation and prayerfully come up with the right decision based on that outcome.
Mm-hmm. So then moving right to the Breonna Taylor and the no-knock warrant.
With that particular case, there seems to have been a whole lot of confusion going on. And they entered the house looking for an individual who, in fact, had already been in police custody. So there was something going on there that just didn't line up in terms of maybe the homework that was done to connect the dots so that that particular tragedy would not have occurred. A very unfortunate incident, and I think that the outcome on that as well will be one in the best interest of justice.
So, telling, are you there, Mr. Neal?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
So let's go with then George Floyd. Now, if you were back on the job, and I think I had mentioned to you this pre-interview, if you were what one of the officers are claiming, they were a rookie, they didn't know better, he was the supervising officer, what would have been your reaction? If that was your supervising officer and they claimed innocent, they were standing there, they were listening to him, how would you have processed that out? And your thoughts, what did you see there? Did you just see blatant criminality?
Well, what I saw based on what I was able to see, like most Americans, at one point, the initial response was for the using of a counterfeit $20 bill. And Mr. Floyd was already in custody, handcuffed behind his back. He was in a patrol car, and he was taken out of that patrol car by the officer Chauvin. Once he was in that patrol car, I think that he was you know, secured enough where he could have been transported to the police station for further processing. Mm-hmm. What transpired for them to put, well, the officer to get him out of the car and have place him on the ground with his handcuffs behind him after that is not clear to me, and it doesn't seem appropriate. And for this particular officer, as well as the others, to put knees on him, and particularly in the neck area near the carotid artery to cut off the blood flow, as we watch minutes and minutes and minutes go by for that to happen, it definitely reeks of criminality. It definitely, to me, reeks of intent and malice. And
so let me ask you this then, Deacon Neil. If you were one of the rookie cops or the ones with the standing there and he was your training officer, would you have intervened? Would you have risked backlash from the rest of the force? Because you know the old saying, the blue wall, everybody sticks together. How would you have intervened to say, look, enough's enough? Because it only took one of them.
Right. I guess it would depend upon the level of time that I had on the job. But mm-hmm. Me personally, I can't stand by and just see somebody choke the life out of somebody. So I would have definitely said something and acted upon it. But, you know, you have to be really careful in there based on what you just spoke on. But I couldn't see it. I could not see just letting someone just be choked and killed and the breath of life come out of them and without some kind of intervention. That's not in my heart.
Mm-hmm. So then I want to move on to my next question then. And in the spirit of transparency, I have been so blessed to have learned so much from you and my job with the school district. And one thing you oftentimes shared with me was when you were on the job, you always told me to, be decisive in your action and don't waste unnecessary time. So getting back to the Rashard case out of Atlanta, how would you have handled that? Because there was so many different ways that could have been processed.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, the police were called in response to a man sleeping in the drive-thru. And of course, you're going to respond to the scene. You're going to observe the scene and see what's going on. And then approach it at that point. Now, one of the things that I noted on there was that they had him move his car to park it. If a man is that intoxicated, why would you have him drive his car? What if there was a family walking by and he either fell asleep again or hit the gas or something like that and ran the family over? Now who's mm-hmm. responsible for something like that? If a man was that intoxicated, why would you have him drive a car and park it?
Mm-hmm. Or what's most compelling to me is when he was running away, from what I understand, you have his car, okay? You had his keys, you got his identification. So if he ran away, it's not like you could not have apprehended him, you know? And once again, what I've learned from you, you know, and doing what we did at the school district is you said, always assess the situation and think de-escalation first. So they could have, you know, what ran through the officer's mind to say, he goes from chasing, having all the identification to lethal force?
It's hard to say what's in someone else's mind.
Right.
Because that leads to state of mind. And when you're out there, your adrenaline is pumping. And there were some things that happened before that, you know, so we just can't just like fast forward.
Be a Monday morning quarterback. Right. So I'll ask you, how would you real quickly process that based on what you saw with your training and experience?
Again, a lot of that goes towards training and experience and time on, because when you're in a situation like that, your adrenaline is pumping. You just wrestled around with a guy and now he's running away and he has a taser. It's really hard to put all that into focus on what you would do, because You don't know if the taser is empty, and then he's turning around. You could be incapacitated. There are so many things that go into having to make a split-second decision. You really can't train for it. You can train all the best you want, but when people are under pressure.
Well, I like what the Atlanta mayor says. Sure, there's things you can do, and there's things you should do. Let's take a pause, okay? I'll just say this. This was part one of a two-part segment, and we're going to be right back with part two, and we want you to stick around, okay?
Okay, thank you.